Welcome to episode 13 of the Connected Kingdom podcast, connecting truth with life in a digital world. And welcome to the Connected Kingdom podcast. I'm your host, Tim Challies, and I'm here as always, or as almost always, with my co-host, David Murray. Say hi, David.
Hi, Tim and everybody. Good to be here with you.
All right, and we've also got a guest today, as we promised you. Our guest is none other than Justin Taylor, who you know from his world-famous blog over at the Gospel Coalition. Justin, thanks for being on our show.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Sure. Now, Justin Taylor is the Matt Drudge of Christian blogging, as he's widely known. I've often heard that comparison. And now, Justin, I got to ask you, and you might break my heart here, but when I go to conferences, very, very often people come up to me and say, you know, I like your blog. Thanks for writing. I also really like Justin Taylor's blog. I think for you and me, at least in most people's minds, we're somehow closely linked. Do you think that's fair?
Yeah, I think so. I've always wondered if we could do some sort of Venn diagram, how much overlap there is between the people who read us. But yeah, I think people tend to put us in the same category. So
all right. That's
a good thing. I'm in good company if I'm linked to you. So.
Thanks, JT. You know, I'm glad to be with you, man. You've got a great blog. Now, tell me how the blog came about. I remember the Christian blogosphere before you came about, and I know it's a little bit different now. So tell me how the blog actually started all those years ago.
Yeah, that's a good question. I think it was 2004, and I was skimming through Hugh Hewitt's book, just called Blog, I think. And blogs were starting to take off, and there were this new thing. And I actually remember thinking that I'm too late to join in the blogosphere, that everybody already had a blog. And I spent a fair bit of time just with a very small circle of friends emailing new stories or things of interest, or if I'd see a book that I thought that they would find helpful, I'd email it to them, and just sort of a regular occurrence throughout the day, which overlapped a bit with my job at Desiring God. And so I thought, well, why don't I just take the energy and the time that I'm putting into emailing a few friends and see if anybody beyond those friends might be interested. I just always had the guiding principle of not really trying to please anybody else, but just putting up things that I found to be of interest. And if there were other people who shared those interests, great. If not, that was fine too. But
yeah,
that was really the start of it 6 years ago.
All right. Now, I've heard it said, maybe it's an apocryphal tale, that when you decided to name the blog, you were hunting around for a name, you glanced up, and there near your desk, you saw the book Between Two Worlds, and that's how you came up with the name of your blog. Any truth in that?
That is completely true. I could not think of a name, and I just looked right over, and in my little home study, there was Stops Between Two Worlds, which I had to read for John Piper's preaching class, and thought, yeah, I think that fits, and typed it in. It wasn't taken. Actually, I think it was the betweentwoworlds.blogspot.com was taken. So
right.
I don't know why I thought of Theologica, but my original address was this impossible to remember Theologica.blogspot.com, which
right.
does not exactly roll off the tongue and has nothing to do with Between Two Worlds.
But. There you go. Now, at the beginning, you thought that it was too late. You thought when you were getting started, you already thought, well, this was too late. Blogging's already come and gone, or at least all, you know, everybody's reading all the blogs they want. Obviously, that didn't prove true. Your blog has been very popular, very successful. Do you think if you were to start it today, it would be the same thing, or do you think it is too late now to start your kind of blog?
No, I don't think it's too late. I think if you look at some of the guys who are blogging successfully, I think now it's about finding a bit of a niche or niche, as other people might say. You know, maybe just being a generalist blogger like I am is a little bit more difficult, but somebody like Brian Croft, who's focusing on pastoral issues, I think that appeals to a limited demographic, but within that it can truly be helpful. And I mean, it goes without saying that a successful blog is not one that garners a certain amount of hits or a certain amount of links. I mean, the other extreme to that is if nobody's reading it, then it's in no sense, I guess, is it really successful. But we should define success by the degree to which it edifies and helps people. And so I don't think, for those who might be listening and have blogs, garnering a large audience is not that big of a deal. It's whether or not the audience that you're trying to reach is being served well by the post that you do. Mm. And so I don't think it's too late at all. In fact, I think blogging is sort of waning, with people just preferring to tweet rather than blog. So I think there's lots of opportunities for people to come in and have a blog that really does make a difference in the lives of people.
Well, Justin, if you were late, I don't know where that puts me, because I didn't start until last October. And you know, everyone started tweeting, so well.
Right. Well, you're a good example of that, David. I think, you write from your own experience and from what you know best, and there are people who are reading that faithfully and being encouraged by it. So
there's hope for me. Good.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right in that the future of blogging, such that it is going to be blogging to a certain niche, and there's still lots of room to get into those small ones. And you may be right that blogging about very general topics to a general audience will be harder to do, and I think that's because people like you already have that niche filled. Mm-hmm. It's a big, wide one. But certainly I think a guy like Brian is a great example of somebody who's come in, found a niche, and has just gone right in there and done very, very well. And there's plenty of other blogs we could point at as well. Something like Stuff Christians Like has become really popular, mm-hmm. I guess, just in that group of people who want to read sort of sarcastic humor about the church. Well, beautiful, there it is, and you can go there and read it. So I do think people are starting into the blogosphere and doing it well even now. So for those who still want to, well, I guess there's still hope. Now, JT, I want to know a little bit about your family. Maybe we should have started there, but tell me about your wife and family.
I've been married to Leah for next month. It'll be 12 years, and we knew each other in elementary school, middle school, high school, college, went to the same church, we worked at Applebee's together. So we've known each other a long time, although we didn't become romantically linked. That doesn't sound like too corny of a phrase, until the end of college. So we've known each other for a couple of decades, but our romance doesn't go too much past our 12 years of marriage. We have three kids, ages almost 7, 5, and 2. All three kids were adopted within the United States, and just a great blessing to us, and we just love being parents of these three little kids, and hope God can make us faithful, godly parents. But family life is good, and a real grace in my life that I don't deserve by any stretch of the imagination.
Yeah, I know that feeling. Now, tell me how the Lord saved you. I believe you grew up in a Christian home, did you not?
I did. It was we went to a United Methodist Church, which is obviously different theologically than where I'm at now, but grew up reading Bible storybooks and going to Sunday school. My mom was usually my Sunday school teacher. So I prayed the sinner's prayer age 3, age 4, age 5, multiple times when I was age 6. I mean, it was a fairly decisionalistic, recommit my life to Christ sort of thing. But it wasn't until my freshman year, I think my freshman year, especially playing basketball, I was more worldly than I'd ever been. And between my freshman and sophomore year, I went to an FCA, Fellowship of Christian Athletes leadership camp. And whether that was the place that I truly understood the gospel for the first time and was converted, or if that was a place where I, was already converted, but I really understood more about what the gospel meant, I'm not sure, but that was between my freshman and sophomore years of high school, was a really decisive moment. And I think that was where I really saw for the first time that it is Christ's righteousness residing outside of me that is the ground of my salvation, and that it's not some sort of mixture of Christ died for me, but my good works and my sincerity keep me in the faith or commend me to God to some degree. So I've had a long-standing interest in justification, and it really goes back to that moment where I may have been converted or just truly saw the fullness of the gospel during that time period.
So your testimony, like so many testimonies of Christian kids, is not a specific date and time and a lightning bolt, but in some ways a gradual awakening or progressive awakening to the Lord's truth, and somewhere along the line God saved you, but you're not going to point to an hour and a minute.
Right, and I think there was an hour. I'm just not sure when it was, if it was my young hour, if it was my older hour, but... Right. Yeah, I think it was Don Whitney, and this has probably been said by a number of other people, that you don't necessarily have to figure out when you took your very first breath to determine that you are alive today. You check and see if you're breathing now, and that indicates that you have life, physical life, and the same sort of thing spiritually. So I don't spend too much time wringing my hands trying to figure out that exact moment in time, but...
Tim, it sounds to me as if the basketball court's the place to go. Was that not where Mike Pullman was converted as well? Or there was an element of basketball camp or something in there?
Yeah, I was just thinking the same. Interesting. Yeah. I wouldn't have guessed. I hadn't had you pegged as a basketball player there, JT.
Yeah.
Justin, when you were converted, did it make any difference to your sense of calling, what you're going to do with your life? Where did that come in?
Yeah, that's a good question, David. I remember my grandmother, her wish being that I would become a pastor. I mean, this was when I was in elementary school. Mm. I don't really remember thinking about it that much in high school. I think I wanted to be a psychologist or a teacher. It was very decisive for me when I went off to university after graduating high school, that it was recommended I take this study of religion class at a public university, just as one of my intros. And taking that class led me to become a study of religion major. The professor became my advisor, was very, very influential, very secular, a Protestant atheist, was his self-designation. But that really got me into thinking more theologically and having to do apologetics on the side just to keep my head above water. And even then, the question of pastoral ministry, I think I had a view of pastors as anti-intellectual based on my upbringing, and I thought that I was just above that until somebody gave me, in fact, it was Matt Perman who first sent me a John Piper audio cassette. And I listened to that over the summer. I wasn't a Calvinist. And I had trouble keeping up intellectually with Piper, even though I was in kind of swimming in these academic circles and reading academic religious studies books. Piper kind of blew that anti-intellectual misconception out of the water for me. So,
for the benefit of the younger audience, do we need to explain what an audio cassette is?
Yeah, it was kind of like an 8-track, except smaller, I guess.
Right, exactly.
I thought you were going to ask to explain who John Piper was. But...
Oh, okay. No, I think they all know who he is.
So yeah. You mentioned earlier, Justin, that you took a preaching class under Piper. Was that with a view to pastoral ministry or not?
Yeah, I'm trying to remember. That was 98, the same year we got married, and... after college, I really wanted to go to Trinity Evangelical. My goal, I think, was to try to get an MDiv in 3 years so I could move right from there and do a PhD and get a PhD while I was still in my 20s. I think that was still the trajectory in mind, of going to Bethlehem, becoming an apprentice there, taking their seminary-level program. But the Lord just kept shutting the door for me on PhD work, and I could not decide for the longest time. It was a source of existential angst of, am I called to be a pastor? Am I called to be a professor? Am I called to be a pastor? Am I called to be a professor? And the Lord just, for whatever reason, kept both of those doors relatively shut. And I think 5 years ago now, this third P, you know, between publishing, or between being a professor and being a pastor of publishing, that door opened wide, and I think that's really been the best fit for me, and as a long-term fit, not as a primary content producer myself, which really fits into my whole blogging ethos, but as being one who helps to shepherd along the content of others and point people to it. That seems to be where the Lord wants to use me in his kingdom, and I'm content and grateful for that.
Yeah, well, I mean, you're certainly, your pastoral heart comes out, Justin, and you are shepherding, I don't know, many, many thousands of people day by day. It's a huge responsibility. Sometimes when I read your blog, which I do every day, I think, does he do any work? I hope Crossway aren't listening, but I mean, the amount of time and thought and effort you put into it is just huge. How do you balance all that?
Yeah, it's another good question. I'm not sure that I have the secret to balancing all of it. Schedule issues and time management, those are always, I'm no Matt Perman, even though Matt Perman and I were good friends in college from the start of my freshman year. But I think it almost sounds corny to say this or cliche-ish, but I think the Lord does guide my blogging and give me help beyond what would be the case of just naturally trying to do it. I'll give you an example. The other day I was reading a scholar's paper that he's going to be giving at ETS. I'd asked him to see it. He graciously sent it to me. I read it. Out of reading that probably came, I was probably 3 or 4 blog posts. Because I was seeing, you know, I saw a book or two recommended that I ended up buying that I'll probably mention, an argument and an article that I thought was intriguing. So there's sort of an organic unity to what I'm doing at Crossway and in my own personal life. There's just a lot of overlap. You know, reading something that comes in that we're going to publish, a good quote, that just, again, overlaps with the blogging sort of interest. And other thing I'd say is that I do some fresh content posts here and there, you know, a brief biblical meditation or something like that. But so many times what I'm doing is just pointing away from myself to saying, here's a good book, here's a good article, here's a good sermon, here's a good clip from YouTube. That doesn't take an enormous amount of time to actually do the post. But I think I've, from just years of experience of doing this and just kind of swimming in these articles and books, I have a certain nose or sense for what's out there, what's good, so that I don't need to read every page of the book to know that this is a good book from a trusted source and you're going to get something of value from it. So I think it can, it does take time, it does take energy, but the blogging feels, it never feels like a burden to me, or that I wake up thinking, what, I've got to do something today. It all just sort of comes natural. And I'm not saying that, you know, to be boastful or anything. I think, I think, again, the Lord helps me, even though it sounds kind of funny to say, yeah, the Lord guides my blogging.
No, I can believe it, Justin. And the Lord's given you a reliable reputation, which is so rare today on the internet.
Hey, Justin, I want to ask you a quick question about blogging, and then I want to ask you a couple things about publishing, if that's okay.
Yeah.
One more blogging question is, you blog at Gospel Coalition, which makes you only one step removed from a whole lot of people in ministries, and you work for Crossway, which makes you only one step removed from a whole lot of ministries and individuals, and you have other connections as well. Do you find that that impacts your objectivity? Do you find that it makes it difficult to know what to say sometimes, because you just have so many things to be aware of, so many factors you want to balance?
It doesn't feel like it. I mean, I know where you're coming from. I mean, I would never write negatively about a Crossway book or critique it. And I don't think that that's... I also, on the flip side of that, wouldn't positively plug something that I didn't believe wholeheartedly in. So there's somewhat of the balance. I think the Crossway one is the one where that could come up most acutely. But I tend to avoid stuff if I think it's negative, but I have some sort of conflict of interest thing. I don't know if that helps
No, I think that's
what you're
great.
asking me.
One thing I've noticed about your blog is it's 99.9% positive. So when you do take a stand, you mentioned recently a bit of a situation with a prominent theologian, and when you do that, it's so rare that I think it has a lot more impact than it otherwise would, simply because you're pointing to good resources so often and not using it as a platform for gossip or for even just complaining about things that maybe even deserve to be complained about. So I
Right,
appreciate
and
that.
I think other blogs have more of that niche of going after people and going after bad books. And I think you could easily spend 40 hours a week just doing that. There's so much terrible stuff. But one of the driving things I've wanted with my blog, I think of it almost as like a slideshow of 90% of the time. I want to be sliding in front of people's eyes who are already going to be on the internet, something edifying, something encouraging. So I think there's value in critiquing the bad books, and I appreciate that from other sites, but I think that's more of my focus is keeping it on the positive of what I want to recommend.
Good, yeah, and I think people appreciate that. Now, about books, we don't have a lot of time left, so I want to slide in a couple of questions about writing. You hear a lot today that it's very hard to become an author today, that publishers are really only trying to find people who have an established audience or who are already published authors. You work for a publisher, you have a lot to do with publishing and with other publishers even. Is that true? Is it very difficult to become a published author today?
If by published you mean published by, an evangelical publishing house, I think yes. I mean, the flip side of it is that it's easier than ever to get a book actually published. If you want to see your name on Amazon.com, it's relatively easy with self-publishing and with other opportunities. I remember asking Leonard Goss of Brobin and Holman that question years ago, and he said that it's easier to get published if you're already an author, and it's harder to get published if you're a first-time author. And I think there's some wisdom in that. The stakes just, especially with the economy, it's always a risk publishing a book. I mean, there's some authors where it's not much of a risk, but if you're an unknown quantity, it's more of a risk. And because publishing is a ministry/business, those business components have to be in there. And so I think it is harder to some degree.
Yeah, and in traditional publishing, it's the publisher who assumes all of the risk. He's the one who has to put money into editing it and put money into printing it, and the author just has to use time to write it. So I appreciate that, that the publisher takes the risk. Now, do you think the blogosphere has become a bit of a minor leagues for publishing? If people want to someday see their name on a book, if they think they really believe they've got something to say, do you think it's a good idea to start a blog and find opportunities to write that way and prove that you can gather an audience?
I think so, for two reasons. One, just the discipline of actually writing and constructing sentences and putting your work out there for people to see. If you're somebody who has not published a lot, it's a good way to get your writing style, your voice, your ideas out to the public. And it's a good testing ground in terms of audience. I mean, if you labor away day after day and nobody's noticing your writing, nobody's picking it up, it doesn't become popular within any groups, there's something there indicating that this might be too much of a risk for a publisher to take. So I do think I keep my eyes on the blogosphere. It's just part of my job, and I think there are emerging writers coming out of the blogosphere who may have just gone straight to trying to publish in the past. But I think it's a good opportunity, one that people should avail themselves of. Yeah, David.
Are you worried about the future of publishing, given all the changes in the internet, the collapse of newspaper industry and things like that? Is it a concern that especially this insistence that really all content be free content?
I think everybody in publishing is probably somewhat excited and somewhat nervous just about the future, because literally nobody knows what the future is going to hold with electronic publishing. I think the models that have worked in the past, they're going to be passé at some point. I don't know where I saw this. Maybe Tim linked to it, but they did a survey of how many people would pay even a small amount for Twitter, and the results were 0%. It's just the reality of, you know, so many people use this and benefit from it, and yet they're not willing to pay for it. So the whole free versus cost dynamic, we're in uncharted waters here, and there's a number of people taking a lot of time and energy trying to think through these things. But so it's an exciting time, and probably a time to be a little bit nervous of just what is this going to look like, and what does publishing look like 10 years from now?
I saw the London Times put up a paywall on its newspaper about a month ago, and their readership dropped to 15,000. Only 15,000 were prepared to pay for it. They lost 90% of their readers.
Wow.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah, paywalls generally have proven themselves, at least for online content, to be a complete disaster. A lot of people have found that out. Now, just before we go, Justin, give me a couple of products that are coming out that you've seen, Crossway or otherwise, I suppose, that you're particularly excited about, books or resources of some sort that you're excited about, you think people are going to want to be aware of and looking out for.
Yeah, there's so many, but I'll mention a non-Crossway one first. I believe Shepherd Press is publishing it. If I'm not mistaken, the title is Long Story Short. I don't know if you've seen that, Tim, but it's Old Testament devotionals for families. Basically 10 minutes a day, but it's somebody in the Sovereign Grace networks who's done it. And I wrote a little blurb for it and just said that I think every church should try to get these by the box full. It's just simply the best devotional, family, creative, Christ-centered material in the Old Testament I've seen. So long story short, I assume that's coming out this fall. Of course, a couple Crossway books. John Piper's doing a major book for us this fall called Think, The Life of the Mind and the Love of God, that Mark Knoll wrote a foreword for, just really encouraging evangelicals to use their minds to glorify God. Fred Zaspel doing the theology of B.B. Warfield. Warfield, one of the greatest theologians in American history, never got around to writing a systematic theology, and Zaspel did his Ph.D. on all of Warfield's theology. Read everything there is to read, even the unpublished stuff, and has systematized that in one volume. So this is, in some ways, the systematic theology that Warfield never got to write.
Wonderful.
So there's other things. Deep Things of God on How the Trinity Changes Everything by Fred Sanders, or Church Planter by Darren Patrick. Of course, there's always a long list of books of stuff forthcoming, but those are something that come to mind.
Good. Good deal. Well, Justin, we are out of time, but thank you for being here. Really appreciate you taking a bit of time out of your day. And, maybe we'll have you on again sometime in the future. Thanks a lot, Justin. Again, if you'd like to interact with us about this show, head to Facebook, do a search for Connected Kingdom, or go to my blog or David's blog and leave a comment. Also, we're thinking about trying a couple of different shows in the future, so stay tuned. We might try some different ideas and maybe find a way of getting some of you involved in this show. Stay tuned for that. We'll talk to you next week. Cafe, and I'm watching all the passerbys pass my way.